Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a wet, soggy day in Los Angeles. This is the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1, Joy Taylor, never looked better, joining me on the show this morning. It's so nice to have Joy in living color now on television. And, yeah, I still need a haircut. Let's not get into it. Joy looks fantastic, and we are ready to roll 1 hour from now. Coach K, Mike Krzyzewski. I'm excited to talk to him about a lot of things. Number one, he's coached 3 Olympic teams. He also, early in his career, coached against Michael Jordan, and Duke wasn't very good back then. They hadn't popped, right? So we got some Michael Jordan to talk about with him, some LeBron to talk about with him. He is really the one college coach that's been able to bridge the NBA college spectrum, and he's done very well with both, respected by both players, coaches at both levels. So, Joy, how are you this morning on a really, really wet day? We're supposed to get great weather in L.A. for the next 10 days after this, but it just, I'll tell you this, the drought's over in California, officially.
Well, I'm doing good, but it's actually a good thing that we have, you know, some rain. We're supposed to be inside anyway, so
yes.
No incentive to go anywhere. This is a very big week in California to stay home, so I'm happy for the rain.
Okay, here's the story I want to lead my show with today. Tua had him on the show a couple days ago. Alabama quarterback, Roll Tide. I like him. He's my number one quarterback, although I do think there's an injury concern, but I would draft him still. I've said that. So Mike Lombardi's a buddy of mine. Mike works at The Ringer, used to be at Fox Sports, used to work for the Patriots, used to run the Browns. He has 2 teams telling him something bad about Tua.
2 teams I've talked to have flunked him. They flunked him on not just the hip, on the multitude of injuries. Like, the risk far outweighs the reward.
All right, let me address that. I tell my kids this all the time. What teams? Who's levying the criticism against you? If Bob Costas ripped me or Joe Buck, it would hurt. If a blogger does it, I couldn't care. Who are the 2 teams? A third of this league is poorly run. Who are the teams? What if it was New England that told him, hoping to poison the waters, and he drops in the draft down to New England? Or at least in an area where New England could draft him in the 15, 16, 17 spot. What if it's the Jags? They've got 9. You know, if the Chargers are on the fence and we tell everybody we flunked our, and it gets out there, maybe they pass, and we get them at 9. A lot of people want Tua, but they're in the 20s and they can't get him. But if he drops to 12 and 13, New England gives you 4 picks, goes up and gets him. I don't know who it is. I trust Mike. I like Mike. I am not in any way indicting Mike. I'm saying I don't know who the teams are. 30% of the teams in this league don't know what they're doing. Their coaches don't know what they're doing. Their GMs are not very good. They whiff on scouting assignments. How do I know their team doctors are any good? I would guess the Patriots team doctors and the Ravens team doctors are probably better than the bottom third of the league in Detroit through the year. Cincinnati, wouldn't you? Aren't there more great hospitals and medical professionals in New York, California, Massachusetts? Cleveland's got the Cleveland Clinic. I bet you the Browns have great medical people. It's a hotbed for great medical personnel in the country. So, I mean, who's saying this? That's the first point. I have no idea. Secondly, Tua missed 4 games in 2 years in the SEC. Easily the most physical football conference in college football. Let's be honest. Big 12, Pac-12, those are pillow fights. ACC outside of Clemson, pillow fights. He missed 4 games in 2 years. And oh, by the way, is that injury prone? Because 2 teams are saying injury prone. Is that injury prone? Because I know he plays well when he's hurt. I saw him throw for 418 yards and 4 touchdowns against LSU, the best college football team perhaps of all time, when he was hurt. We know NFL guys play when they're hurt. Let me ask you. He's had 1 major injury and 1 injury-riddled season from high school to college. 1. And in that injury-riddled season, he missed 4 games out of 13. Is that injury prone? Aaron Rodgers, 2 collarbone surgeries. Is Aaron Rodgers injury prone? I don't think he is. Big Ben, last decade, He has started a full season three times in 10 years. Is Big Ben injury prone? Didn't they just sign him to an extension? And he's old. Tua's not. Well, what about Deshaun Watson? Do you know why DeAndre Hopkins is no longer in Houston? Because they're clearing cap space because they're going to pay Deshaun Watson $250 million. He tore his knee up in college. He's torn it up in the NFL. He couldn't play last year, couldn't take a plane for a game because his kidney was all messed up. Is he injury prone? Doesn't seem to deter the Houston Texans. They're going to pay him $250 million. By the way, Carson Wentz has missed 8 games in 4 years. He's missed entire playoff runs. They signed him to a long-term deal. My point is everybody's hurt in this league playing quarterback outside of Russell Wilson and Tom Brady. Let me ask you this. Patrick Mahomes, he's the greatest player in the league, right? Okay, stay with me. If you think Tua is injury prone, stay with me on this. In college, Patrick Mahomes had wrist surgery. Bet you didn't know that. He got knocked out of a game. Concussion. Tua never did. Oh, he played 8 games 1 year because of an AC joint issue. In 2016, Tua never had that. In college, I can make the argument. Knocked out of a game, KO, wrist surgery, AC joint issue. He was more injury prone than Tua in college. Oh, by the way, Patrick goes to the NFL. He had an ankle injury last year. And then he missed a bunch of games because he had a dislocated kneecap. He missed at least a couple. So I got 5 injuries with Patrick Mahomes, and he's going to make $350 million. Aaron Rodgers, Big Ben, Deshaun Watson, Carson Wentz, Patrick Mahomes, are they injury prone? Other teams don't think so. Deshaun's going to get paid. Patrick's going to get paid. Carson Wentz did get paid. Big Ben got paid again. And Aaron just got paid a year ago. And they've all got injuries. Number 3, thanks to a new collective bargaining agreement, so what if you draft him and he only lasts 4 years? Arizona drafted a quarterback. They bailed on it. 12 months later, they drafted another quarterback, and we're all sitting here today going, I kind of like the direction they're going. Let's say you draft Tua. He lasts 4 years in Miami. That's where you draft him, Miami. 4 years as Brian Flores builds that defense up in the O-line up. 4 years. And he averages 13 games a year. He misses 3 games. But he's good enough, I think he is, to win 9 of the 13 games. He's not worth it? You don't give him a second contract. He's not worth that rookie contract in the rebuild? The merchandise he sells, the games he wins, the energy he provides, the value to the organization. This is not 15 years ago when you give Jamarcus Russell a contract and if he whiffs, you're done. So I got A. Who says they flunked him? I was in the Chargers war room 2 years ago. They took a player off their board because of injuries. He got drafted by a team that had recently won a Super Bowl. Translation, what's your board say? Even Chargers are well run. You know, the team that had it, well run. Disagreement. Opinions, disagreements. A lot of people didn't think Lamar's going to work. Lamar works. Disagreements. The second part is, what the hell's injury prone mean? Is Patrick Mahomes injury prone? Is Aaron Rodgers? Is Big Ben? Is Carson Wentz? Is John Watt? And the third thing is, even if he is, I'd still do it. The kid is Drew Brees accurate, unbelievable leader, the best, most accurate thrower of the football, intangible, sees the field, and it's not punitive if he's hurt after 4 years. It's not. You just listen, you'll watch him in camp. If by the end of year two you're like, I don't know how long he's going to last, but we love him, draft another quarterback. And he doesn't even have to play this year, Ryan Fitzpatrick. So sit around, make sure he's healthy, watch it, watch, watch. And if you know in that year, I don't know. They have 13 draft picks. 13. Solve the rest of the issues for the team. Continue the culture. They're going to win games. They won 5 of their last 9. But I don't buy this with Tua. I don't know who said it. I see injured quarterbacks winning Super Bowls all over this league. And it's not punitive if you draft him and he does get hurt. I just think he's too good to say no to.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
I've heard Rick Bucher, for one, has said he's not sure LeBron wants to come back. This is not a good setup for him. Older body. He's got no chance to get through the Clippers. I disagree. I think he really wants to get through it. LeBron's playing a different game than everybody else. Okay, everybody else is competing against themselves. LeBron's competing against Michael Jordan. LeBron's standards are much higher than everybody else in the league. Nobody else in this league is in the, could he be the best player of all time? Nobody else is close. I mean, Anthony Davis, how many playoff series does he have in 7 years that he's won? One? And he's the second best player maybe in the NBA? Third maybe behind Kawhi? Giannis has two playoff series wins. It's LeBron here, Kawhi next, and then it's just the Grand Canyon between even the next best players. Well, LeBron's going to be sitting home here in his 17th year. And guess what's starting in about a week? Michael Jordan, 10-part documentary. 20-year-olds never saw Michael play live. Either did 30-year-olds. I did. And that's why I say Michael's the best player ever. But a lot of 20-year-olds have lived in the tunnel of LeBron only, and they're LeBron fans. And oh, don't kid yourself. Players like Michael, the late Kobe Bryant, and LeBron are absurdly competitive. Michael was petty during his Hall of Fame speech. Kobe wouldn't leave the gym if he lost a game of horse. He would play you until he beat you. And we know LeBron watches social media. He reacts very quickly. He likes his attention, and I like LeBron. LeBron's going to be sitting at home, 17th year, best player he's ever had on a team in his peak, AD. Roster is old. It's not getting better. It's a weak draft, crappy free agency class, and the cap's coming down. They can't afford anybody else and don't have anybody on that roster, not named LeBron or AD, that anybody else wants. I like Kuzma. He's not special. This is the year. But it's also in terms of branding. The 20-year-olds are going to watch this 10-part series, and those are LeBron guys. And guess what? Every talk show host, Joy, me, the Stephen A's, the Skips, the Shannons, the Whitlocks, the Nick Wrights, the Gottliebs are all going to be like, man, I forgot he's the greatest ever. And LeBron will be sitting home and watching that as a hyper-competitive athlete. Don't kid yourself. LeBron wants to come back badly. It's one thing to have the MJ documentary on and you're playing and dropping 32 a night. It's another to be watching it, and then you turn on the sports networks, which you watch all the time, we all know that, and they're all like, you know, that debate was stupid. MJ is clearly so much better. Even Nick Wright talked about this the other day on our show.
We didn't get to see LeBron in the playoffs last year. If they don't have a playoffs this year, we won't get to see it. And then you're into year 18, and while I've never been in the business of doubting LeBron, then you are one tweaked groin away from what? LeBron not being in the playoffs again, and then wait, was the last great LeBron playoff moment the 51-point game one, and then we never see him in the postseason again? Like, if you miss this postseason, that door starts to open, and I think the NBA is so tied still to LeBron, it's very important this year gets in some way, shape, or form.
By the way, LeBron said this 4 years ago, quote, my motivation is the ghost I'm chasing, LeBron told Sports Illustrated's Lee Jenkins. The ghost played in Chicago. Well, guess what? The ghost is coming back for 10 parts as LeBron sits and watches the shows talk about him and the world talk about him. These guys are all so competitive. It's why they're great. It's why Kobe was great. It's why MJ was great. It's why Jeter was great. They're petty. Tom Brady texting his dad, we got his phone records. Yeah, he's only got how many years? I got a bunch of years. I'm going to beat Peyton Manning. He's going to be the greatest of all time. That's who they are. It's great. Don't think LeBron wants to sit and watch on TV the shows and in the MJ series in probably the last great year to win a championship for him, because AD's not getting younger and healthier. This Laker roster's older, not a lot of tradable parts. The cap's coming down. It's a crappy draft and a bad free agent class. This is what he's got to win with. This is it.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
LeBron James says he won't have any closure if the NBA season is canceled. I do think the NBA is strong enough and star-driven enough it can overcome a missed season. I do. I think baseball is a sport of habit, and if we go 18 months with no baseball – That is irreparable, perhaps, for the next half decade. NBA is star-driven. If they missed a season, you got KD next year, you got LeBron, you got Steph coming back, you got Klay coming back, the Brooklyn story, the Warriors story, I think you'll be fine. The Zion story, he's getting better. And you've got some really fun young teams. Denver and Dallas are young. They're excellent. They're getting better. Milwaukee and the Celtics are young and getting better. So I think the NBA can overcome it. But I do believe for LeBron, and I don't mean to be an alarmist, but I think this year is vital. There's five reasons why I think this is potentially the last year LeBron can win a title. Number one, he ain't getting younger. Number two, Anthony Davis has had lots of injuries. He's fairly brittle. This is as healthy with this rest as he's ever going to be. AD has never at this point in any NBA season been this rested and ready to go. Number three, the Lakers roster is the second oldest in the NBA. Number four, it's a bad draft and a bad free agency class. There's no help on the horizon. And number five, the cap's going down because revenues are going down. So even if you attracted somebody, the Lakers ownership does not want to pay a big burden on the salary cap. So I think this is the year. Also, I think Golden State's going to be significantly better next year. Steph's back, Klay's back, and a lottery pick. And I think the Clippers, because I think we've all worried about the Clippers' chemistry a little bit this year. Well, if they'd have another year to work on the chemistry, I think the Clippers would be a better basketball team next year. So I think this is the year for LeBron. I think he wants to get back. I think he needs to get back. I think the NBA needs to get back. I'm more positive than negative on that. And I'm just a basketball fan. I grew up a huge college and pro basketball fan. Then I covered the UNLV basketball teams with Larry Johnson and Stacey Ogman. You know, my early career was shaped around college basketball. I love it. I still love it. Mark Few's one of my best friends. I love the old stories. And so I'm crossing my fingers on the NBA.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
There's one coach in my lifetime who has been able to cross the bridge college to pro back to college, and it's Mike Krzyzewski. 40 years at Duke, 5 national championships, only coach to lead 3 Team USAs to 3 consecutive Olympic gold medals. And he just interviewed Dr. Anthony Fauci, who is a remarkable American. He's 79 years old. And first of all, verbally, physically, he is so dynamic and robust. And Coach, first of all, thanks. You recently interviewed him. How did you find him to be?
He was, first of all, thanks for having me on, as always. I love your perspectives. Don't agree with all of them, but I love that you. A lot of them, though. You know, I won't bring up the ones I don't. But it was such an honor, first of all, having him on my show and spending 30 minutes with him. You know what he is? He's genuine. He's inspiring. And how often on your show have you been able to talk to somebody who is the very best at what they do? He is the most instinctive and best person in this world, and especially in our country that we know, as far as infectious diseases are concerned. And so he's inspiring when he talks, and he was just so darn genuine. I called him America's, I said, you're America's point guard. He was a point guard in high school. Just so genuine, just so genuine.
You have as much as any coach in my life, and I'm a big believer in what I'm about to say. People that succeed into their 60s and 70s do so by evolving. Rigidity punctures even the smartest people. And I could name names, I'm not going to. But you have spanned 4 and 5 decades because you're a thinking person. You've evolved. And it's funny. When you got into this business, there was a sports section. And that was it. Letter to the editor. Now there's talk radio. There's social media. It is punitively punishing. It is harsh. It is unforgiving. I want to ask you, how do you deal with it? What do you tell your players now, as you have spanned so many decades, about the criticism from strangers to us? I don't know if I could have handled it, Coach, at 17 years old. I don't think I could have handled it. How do you discuss that, the psychological factor that has changed in your lifetime coaching?
Well, you hit on one thing right away, is that in order for a leader to put a message across to the people he has an honor to lead, he or she have to handle it the right way. So I do, you know, I don't, you know, it's a waste of time to get into arguments and not to look, we have a lot of great things said about us. And then we have a lot of questionable things said. And what I tell my players is this is how I handle it. I listen to the people who are knowledgeable and sometimes they're critical. And you should always have an ear open to listen, you know, because that's how you can become adaptive. For them, I try to tell them, especially like late in the season, we had a great year, but we had 2 weeks where we weren't that good. And during that time, I talked to them about, like, look, only listen to one voice. Listen to my voice, and I will tell you the truth. You know, don't let somebody else tell you who you are. You know who you are, and I'll help you. I know who you are as a player and as a college student. Listen to me, listen to our staff. And really, I said, going into your, you know, as you become adults, you will want a circle of people around you, not a big circle of people that you will want to listen to, you know, that will tell you the truth. But you don't have that circle, should be a small one. Yeah. And so we talked to them about that. And then we have a great social media. We have the best one in college sports. And so they're out there too. We like them to be out there, but we like them to be out there under our umbrella.
A lot of people may just think you go out and just, okay, I'm going to go get the best players. I don't believe you do that. Mark Few is a friend of mine. It's all about fit.
Right.
So when I first saw Zion on, you know, Instagram and stuff, I thought he was really raw. I didn't see much beyond dunking. When I fell in love with him, it was his personality. And I have I have a belief. The greatest players, Magic, Kobe, Michael, and I think Zion can be this.
Right.
It's not just their game. It's their mind. They have to be strong, diligent, focused. When was the first time you met with Zion, who I just love the kid? When was the first time you noticed it was personality beyond performance?
Yeah, right away when we visited with him at home and in his school when we were recruiting him, you could tell, one, he you know, a big thing, not that he doesn't love his stepfather, he really loves his mother. That's a key thing. You know, like that you have the ability to love somebody who you respect, who has brought you up, who has taught you. And he had this engaging personality. He's really smart. You know, all the guys that you mentioned, you're talking about people who are not just smart off the court and preparation and whatever. They are smart in the moment that action is happening. Yeah, I've talked. I had an interview about 3 weeks ago, where I talked about Kobe and LeBron. You know, coaching them on the Olympic teams, and they're brilliant at the moment it's happening, and that's unusual. You know, like I can be smart at a timeout and whatever, but when you have somebody who is playing the game and is not just smart about his or her play, but the play of a unit, boy, you have something. That's the treasure. And all those guys had it, and Zion has it. The other thing, one other thing, I hope I'm not talking too long.
Oh, no, please. We got nothing but time.
The other thing, Colin, is that great players want to be coached. Like you just mentioned about who they listen to their coach. They want to be coached. They want to be coached hard. They want to be told the truth. Now, they don't necessarily want to be have that put out to the world. I think they're private in how you do it, but they want it. My best players at Duke have wanted it, and then for the 11 years I coached the U.S. team, those guys wanted it. And not that I did a great job of coaching, but I developed really good relationships
right.
with them. And those are unique. That's a talent.
Yes.
When people start comparing people, like who is the greatest and all that, a lot of times they don't get into the area that we're talking about. The influence of being able to make your teammates better at the moment it is happening is huge. It's just huge. And all the guys you mentioned have it. I think Zion has it, too.
Yeah. You know, you coach not only and you're really the only coach that has done this. I think Boeheim deserves credit, too. And you guys are, you know, very different people. And I love you both. But you've bridged that gap between college and pro. And you also, by the way, were an assistant on the 92 Dream Team. So you saw four different Dream Teams. Some are probably better defensively. Some are more dynamic offensively. I want to go back to Michael Jordan, who's going to have a 10-part documentary on my former employer, ESPN. Do you remember, because I'm sure you recruited him, do you remember the first time you saw Michael Jordan play in high school?
You know, we didn't recruit him. He wasn't, you know, Buzz Peterson was the player, the state player of the year that year in North Carolina. And the two of them have become great, great friends. And Buzz is terrific. But we never recruited him because he committed to North Carolina. I got a chance to see him where he was beating our butt.
Right. Because you were early, Michael. With you had not developed the juggernaut yet at Duke.
Right.
So as you were building that, Mike, here was this young, wiry, relentless player. Did you immediately know once you saw him at Carolina, oh boy, this is different?
Yeah, and, you know, in the 40 years I've had the honor to coach at Duke and in the ACC, to me that the two players, the two opponents that I think were the most talented were Michael and Len Bias, and they had the it, whatever that means. They had it, and it's tragic that we never got to see Len show that with the Boston Celtics. But we did obviously get a chance to see it with Michael.
You also had one of the great players. I covered him because I covered UNLV for years. Christian Laettner is such a iconoclastic. I mean, when we think of great players, he was this tall, unique personality, polarizing in college. I can remember him playing Shaq and getting the best of him. He's interesting. So I guess was he coachable too?
No, he's the best. He was the biggest believer. He would take a bullet for me. He is also one of those guys that could do it at the moment it was happening and make his teammates better. He was like a point center. And you know, Colin, in the history of college basketball, he has to go down as one of the top five players ever.
Yes, and, best I've ever seen, because I didn't see Walton and I didn't see I didn't see Kareem or Walton.
And if you in college were for 4 years and were able to go to the NCAA tournament each year, you could play a maximum of 24 games. You have to win six to win the tournament. Christian's record in the NCAA tournament was 21-2. 21-2. You know, like he was an alien, really. He it didn't translate as much into the pro game. He was a good pro player, but college wise, I've not coached a bigger winner than Christian Laettner. He's the best player to ever play at Duke.
Coach K, for the record, you did not recruit Michael. I imagine you didn't recruit LeBron because he was going to the pros.
Right.
Do you remember, though, the first practice you ever had with LeBron with a dream team? Do you remember that practice?
Well, we had it actually, the one time when we took over, we lost in 2006 in the World Championship. So I got a chance to see him when he was 18 or 19. And, here as a player, he did not know yet that he was as smart or that he had the leadership voice that he has displayed as he's matured. What I did notice, this is an interesting thing, is I did notice how smart he was. You know, these guys would play cards all the time, and one of the times in Japan, and not for, they're just playing, and I watched them play. I trying to get to know them, and I don't know what game they were playing, but there are a lot of them at the table. And LeBron orchestrated the table. He knew what everybody had. He knew whatever. And I said, this kid is really smart. I mean, he's got a personality. And as we then when he joined again in 2007 to qualify for the 2008 Olympics and Kobe then joined the team, I had really two of the smartest players to ever play any sport. And they meshed. That, thank goodness, God bless both of them. They made each other better.
You know, I had a former accountant who used to say this. He said he had a lot of successful clients, and he said they never talk about failure. That's baked into success. You fail because you take chances aggressively. They do talk occasionally about regret. And I look at you and I think to myself, oh, you could have had the Laker job. The late Kobe Bryant was somebody that, you know, I think probably tried to recruit you once or twice to the NBA. Have you ever had a night that you thought you're watching the NBA and you're thinking, maybe I should have given it a run?
You know, I haven't. And I think coaching 11 years, the U.S. team, I probably would have had it in this time. And if I was a college coach with the success I had when I was in my late 40s and early 50s now, I think I'd probably end up being an NBA coach. College has become crazy.
Right.
it's crazy, and you can't develop the relationships that you used to. But,
right.
You know, here's a crazy, my luck, which has always been very, very good. And the two times that I seriously thought about the NBA was in 1990. Dave Gavitt just took over the Celtics, and he's one of the visionaries, one of the great, great men, and a good friend. He offered me the Celtics job, and I went up. I actually met with Red Auerbach and Dave, and I turned it down. In the next 2 years, we won our first two national championships.
Wow.
The Laker thing in 2005, I was close to doing it, and I turned it down. And a few months later, Jerry Colangelo offered me the chance to be the U.S. coach. So I think I might have regretted, because those were the two iconic franchises.
Yeah.
Those were the two franchises as I grew up as a player and a young coach. I said, holy mackerel, the Celtics, the Lakers, are you kidding me? But because those things happen and I got a chance to coach these great players on the U.S. team, I've not looked back. And I've loved coaching at Duke. You know, it's been a good gig for me.
Oh, no. It's, you know, I used to, as I covered Tark, and I love Tark.
I did too.
Very,
yeah, yeah.
You know, one of the things I always remember, and I don't know if I've told you this. So Tark was a contradiction sometimes. There were sometimes he was so darn honest that he was also kind of a fun BSer. But the thing I loved about Tark, you came and said one time, I covered you at a Final Four in Denver, and you came in and said, the thing that impresses me about UNLV and Tark, you said, I have never seen in my career a team play this hard.
Right.
I don't know if you know this.
Yeah.
Jerry
Tarkanian. Well, I knew I said that.
Yes.
Because it's true.
Jerry Tarkanian, I've never seen him happier. I've never seen him smile more. It literally, that was the kindest thing. You know how coaches can be sort of tough on each other and they don't want to compliment in recruiting. I go back and I remember thinking how big it was of you to say that. Did he ever share to you how much that meant to him?
Yeah. You know, we actually became good friends, and Danny, you know, he wrote a book, you know, Rebel with a Cause, and asked me to do the foreword. And I said, it'd be an honor. So I did the foreword to that book. And, you know, people do not understand just how good a coach that guy was. He had immense talent. Okay. And it's not easy to get that level of talent to play that hard and unselfishly. And at times you can get them to play unselfishly offensively. They played unselfishly defensively.
Yes.
And that's what made them great. And we had a hell of a team in 92. We had this new guy named Grant Hill.
Yes, I remember.
They weren't as the talent difference was not. I mean, we were pretty talented, too.
Yes.
So that wasn't as big an upset as people would say.
No.
But they what great basketball, huh, during that time.
Oh, it's incredible. And I've wrote about that in my first book, is that people just don't understand that Grant Hill was new and you got better as the season progressed. I think Grant was a freshman, so you got
right.
better with Grant Hill, who at the time, I mean, if people would forget this, at the time, Grant Hill was considered the next great American basketball prodigy.
Yeah, he would have been. And, you know, in his first 5 years in the pros, he put up numbers in the top 5 to 10 in the history of the NBA.
Yep.
And then he got injured. And but he was that good, and he was our answer, at least to not negating Stacey Augman, but not letting him be Stacey Augman, you know. And we never had that the year before. We were just steamrolled. They were so damn good.
Yeah. By the way, do you get frustrated at all? Final question, Mike Krzyzewski. I've always considered you not only a basketball coach, but a mentor and a voice of your sport and the face of your sport. There's a certain burden of responsibility with that. You perhaps don't see it as a burden, but it's a big mantle to carry. Some college coaches have come out on this virus, and I just roll my eyes at it.
Right,
I think
right.
Brian Kelly's been very, very smart. Are you ever get disappointed sometimes with the parochialism of some college coaches and the messages they send?
Yeah, and I think you do the same in your profession. You know, they're, what it is, you know, we don't have one of the failures during my time as a coach, and it won't be corrected before I retire, is that we do not have a leader for college basketball.
Right.
You know, like it's not run, it's run by committee. And if our coaches association and there was a commissioner for college basketball and an office and everything like that, because it's a $1 billion business, I think we would come out more with one voice. And as a result, sometimes people make comments like it's like right after a game and for social issues and things like that. And then they didn't really mean all that they said.
Right, right.
And I think we would be, it is disappointing. It's disappointing that we don't come out with a more unified voice.
Yeah.
And what is, Colin, as a college coach, we represent the college player, not the college coach. And we should be the voice of the college player in the environment that college player is in now, not 10 years ago or 20. And we should help streamline the changes that are needed to help the college player. And we don't do that.
Yeah.
There's no way we do that. And that's a failing. That's why we're in the dark ages in some of these things. And I'm saying that the NCAA came out with a great decision to hold all the sports and all that. But really, how we run this thing is not. It's not good. And it's not good. Now, how we're doing the virus? Look, listen to Dr. Fauci.
Right. Right.
Listen to the scientists.
Yeah,
you know, and it's an amazing thing that all these press conferences that are run. Those are the only people I want to hear from.
Yeah,
he's
our North Star.
He is, and let's do the right thing, man. You know, this has never been done before. You know, they're learning too, and they're going up and saying, "This is what we're learning. Don't do this." This other stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. And then give us a chance to learn. And by the way, you know, as this keeps going, let's test so we can learn some more. So when it'll probably come back at some time in some form, then we can kick the hell out of it.
Right.
We can beat it. We can beat it before when jump ball. Right now, we can't beat it like that. And that's why these healthcare providers, you know, in about 45 minutes, I'm going to have the honor to speak to our North Carolina Nurses Association. And are you kidding me? Oh, these are heroes.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. I was in the military. I went to West Point. I was never in combat. These people, even people in combat in the military, they go and they're in the front lines. God bless them for doing that. Then they come back to base camp and they get not completely rejuvenated, but then they go out again. And the healthcare providers, they're on the front lines, and they can't go home. There's fear all the time that they're going to infect their own families. This has never been done before. Yeah. It's never happened. These people are amazing, just amazing. And, you know, whatever we can do to help them, and then let's not let this happen again.
Right.
Yeah,
you
know, let's be prepared and not let this happen again. And anyway, I get so emotional talking about it and talking about it with these people, because I feel like I heard our attorney general say something this morning about, you know, maybe we can get back so people won't have to be home and hiding under their beds. Hey, listen, man, we're not hiding under our beds. We're doing what the hell we're supposed to be doing.
Right.
Don't, you know, what are we talking about when people say stuff? Colin, really, if I'm slap me in the face if that's wrong, but we shouldn't say stuff like that.
Well, I mean, social distancing works. The states that have
yes.
It's Washington State, Oregon, California. I live in a state that's very smart and very progressive. We jumped on it early, and we have not had the hospital surge. So
yeah, I don't know your governor, but when he talks...
No, he's great.
Like, he's great.
Yes.
Like, he had the courage to do this, you know, forget about party lines. Anyway, I'm talking too much. But
you know what? You know what? We hadn't talked in a long time, and you know my regard for you, and I appreciate you and having the passion, and I think you speak well for your industry, and I just love you, and I want to thank you for coming on.
Yeah, thanks, Con. It's always a pleasure and an honor. Keep doing what you're doing, man.